up.
And there are so many distractions at home,
he said in an evasive way.
Now don't jump on Damien. It's not his fault, but my own. I just don't catch on as quickly as I should.
The very next night, Arden came home with even more papers to read. Financial reports, financial advisory services, technical stock charts, tax shelters to evaluate. More work than Papa had ever assigned to him before. At 2 in the morning, I awoke to see Arden still at our small bedroom desk, reading, making notes, his eyes tired and bloodshot. Come to bed, Arden.
Can't, honey.
He yawned and smiled my way. As exhausted as he was, he still didn't lose patience with me or with Papa.
Today your father took off somewhere and left me in charge of the firm. I couldn't take care of my own affairs when his are more important, and now I have to catch up.
He stood up and stretched, then headed for the shower.
Cold water will wake me up.
In another moment, he was back at the bathroom door, beginning to tug off his clothes as he said in a troubled way,
Well, there I was in Damien's office, in charge, and I knew damn well he was expecting me to make every mistake possible so he could shout and humiliate me again in front of everybody. It was a quiet day, and as I sat behind his massive desk and waited for the telephone to ring, I started looking for something and discovered the drawers were very short. I couldn't understand why such a large desk had short drawers. So I fooled around and soon found several small secret compartments way in the back of the drawers.
Fully out of his clothes now, he stood there naked, as if he wanted me to look at him, something I could never do without quivering and blushing. Though he said nothing sexual to me or indicated he wanted me to do more than listen, I sensed a certain kind of expectation.
Adrina, I'm not an expert bookkeeper, but when I found a ledger in one secret compartment, I couldn't resist leafing through it and doing a little calculating. Your father borrows money from his more dormant accounts, uses it to invest in his own account, and when he's made a nice profit, he puts the money back in months later. His clients never know the difference. He's been doing it for years and years.
Blankly, I stared at him.
That's not all he does either,
Arden went on.
Just the other day, I heard him telling one of his wealthiest clients that the stock certificates she found in her attic were worthless except for framing. She mailed him the certificates to frame and hang in his office. A little gift, she told him. Adrina, they were Union Pacific stocks that have split time and time again. When she gave him that little gift, she gave him hundreds of thousands of dollars, and she's 82 years old. Rich, but old. He probably thinks she's got enough and doesn't need it nearly as much as he does, and he must figure she's too old to find out he's cheated her.
He yawned again and rubbed at his eyes, and again he seemed boyish and very vulnerable. For some reason, I was touched.
You know, for the longest time, I wondered why he collected old stock certificates. Now I know why he wants them. He sells them on the West Coast. It's no wonder he's so rich now. No wonder at all.
I should have known he had to be doing something dishonest to have so much cash to invest, when only a few years ago we couldn't even afford meat on our table. Oh, how dumb not to have guessed years ago! I looked at him anxiously. Something sweet, young, wistful, and yearning was in his eyes that pleaded for me to come to him, and this time I felt the stirrings of sexuality in my own body, responding to his call. Alarmed by my surprising arousal, I whirled around to leave. I couldn't let Arden distract me. I had to confront Papa with his thieving ways. Arden, you didn't say anything to Papa about his embezzling funds, did you? I heard his sigh.
No. Besides, when I checked the secret compartments in his desk later, they were empty.
He looked toward the windows, his lips tightening, as if he gave up in trying to entice me by doing nothing aggressive, and he said nothing to keep me with him.
I suppose Damien thinks of everything and had some way of detecting when those papers and ledgers were tampered with.
Go to bed. I'm going to Papa.
I wish you wouldn't. He'll wonder how you know.
I won't say anything that will let him know who told me. I waited for him to protest again, but he turned and headed for the bed. I leaned above him and kissed him goodnight.
Adrina?
He murmured.
Do you really love me? Sometimes in the night I wake up and wonder why you married me. I hope it wasn't just to escape your father.
Yes, I love you, I said without hesitation. It may not be the kind of love you want, but maybe one day soon you'll be surprised.
Let's hope so,
he muttered before he fell into exhausted sleep. If only I'd stayed in bed that night and given to Arden what he needed. If only I hadn't thought I could always set everything right. I expected Papa to be asleep at almost 3 in the morning. Certainly, I didn't expect to see the thin line of yellow light under his closed bedroom door any more than I expected to hear his laughter and a woman's smothered giggle. I stopped short, not knowing what to think or do. Had he been so insensitive as to bring home one of his playmates, as Mama used to sarcastically call them?
Now you stop that, Damien, said a voice I couldn't help but recognize. I've got to go now. We can't risk letting the children find out about this.
Not for one second did I stop to consider what to do once I knew who it was with him, nor did I think of the consequences of my impulsive actions. I threw open the door and stepped into the dimly lit room that Papa had redecorated since Mama died. Red flocked wallpaper with gold-framed mirrors everywhere made his room seem an opulent 18th-century bordello. They were in bed together, Arden's legless mother and my father playing intimately with each other. When they saw me, Billy gasped and snatched her hand away. Papa quickly yanked up the covers to conceal them both, but I'd seen enough. There was such a red rage in my brain, I wanted to scream out every word I was to think of later. But not now. All I could do was yell at her, "You whore!" Then at him I hurled, "You filthy son of a bitch! Leave my house, Billy. I never want to see you again. Arden and I are leaving you, Papa, and taking Sylvia with us." Billy began to cry. Papa slipped discreetly from the covers and pulled on a red brocade lounging robe.
"You silly little girl,"
he said easily, not appearing embarrassed at all.
"As long as Billy wants to stay, she will."
Insulted, feeling Billy had betrayed me and Arden too, I whirled about and raced back to my room to find Arden had gotten up from bed to resume his work. However, it had done him little good. He was slumped over on his desk, fast asleep on his papers. Sympathy rushed to erase my anger, and gently I woke him up and helped him off with his robe. Then, with my arm about his waist, I assisted him to the bed, and in his arms I lay as he fell asleep. All night long I fretted before I reached my conclusion. It wasn't Billy's fault. It was Papa's. He'd seduced her with his gifts, with his charm and good looks, so he could have the kinky thrill of having sex with a legless woman. I couldn't drive Billy out. It was Papa who had to leave so we could all live decent lives. And now I had the perfect weapon to force him to go. I'd threatened to expose him for the fraud and embezzler he was. Even if he had hidden the incriminating ledgers, I had all the information I needed about his illegal stock advisory firm in San Francisco, and that alone would be threat enough. However, it wasn't to be that way. Billy came to me early the next day, soon after Arden and Papa had left for work. Her eyes were red-rimmed and swollen, and her face seemed very pale. I turned my back and continued to brush my hair.
"Audrina, please. I wanted to sink through the floor last night when you stormed into his room. I know what you think, but it wasn't that way. Really, it wasn't."
Viciously, I tore the brush through my hair.
"Listen to me, please," she wailed piteously. "I love Damien, Audrina. He's the kind of man I always wanted but never had."
Spinning around, my eyes blazed as I tried to scream out all of my anger, but for some reason, her tears stopped me. The colors in her eyes made me feel strange, as too many colors always did. She had a habit of always wearing bright clothes. Crimson, scarlet, magenta, electric blue, emerald green, purple, and bright yellows. Colors flashing. Colors and the tinkling wind chimes when trouble came. I put my hand over my ears and closed my eyes, turned my back, and refused to hold the gaze that pleaded for my understanding.
"Turn your back and close your mind as well as your ears. But I think he loves me too, darling,"
she went on.
"Maybe you think because I'm crippled he can't love me. Still, I think he does. And even if he doesn't, I'll just be grateful he gave me a little of what I always wanted. A real man. Compared to him, my three husbands were little boys playing at being men. Damien would never have left me. I know he wouldn't have.
I had to look at her then to see if she truly believed her words. Her beautiful eyes pleaded just as her hands reached out to me. I stepped farther away. She rolled closer to me.
Listen to what I say. Put yourself in my position and maybe you'll understand why I love him. Arden's father walked out on us the day I lost my second leg. He was a weak man who expected me to support him with my skating. When I couldn't, he sought out another woman who could. He never writes. He stopped sending child support long before Arden came of age. I had to earn what I could, and you know yourself that Arden has worked like a man since he was 12, and even before that.
Don't, I wanted to yell. What you do with him is ugly, unforgivable, and you should have known better. We were bound to find out. Bound to.
Your father is the kind of man who needs a woman in his life, just as my son is. Damien hates being alone, hates doing anything alone. He likes to come home and smell good food cooking. He likes someone to run his home, to keep it clean, to take care of his clothes, and I'd gladly do all that for him, even if he never marries me. Adrina, doesn't love make it not ugly? Doesn't love make all the difference? Doesn't it?
I didn't believe Papa loved her. Standing with my back to her, I stiffened and wanted to scream.
All right, darling,
she whispered in a hoarse voice.
Hate me if you must, but don't make me leave the only real home I've ever had, and the only real man who's ever loved me.
Pivoting to confront her, I said sarcastically, Perhaps you'd be interested to hear that my Aunt Elsbeth loved him as much as you say you do, and he claimed he loved her in return, too. Regardless, he soon tired of her, and night after night, after she'd slaved all day to prepare his meals and keep his house clean and take care of his children, he still had other women. She ended up just his slave. That's what she used to call herself, his kitchen and bedroom slave. Is that what you want for yourself? I paused, gasping for breath as I heard the TV in Vera's bedroom giving the morning news. Lazy, lazy Vera, who seldom got up until noon. There will come a day when he will stop loving you, Billy. A day when he'll look at you and say such ugly words you won't have any ego left. He'll have some other woman he'll say he loves like no other before, and you'll be only another notch on his belt with many notches of conquest. She winced as if I'd slapped her. Fresh tears came to shine her blue, blue eyes. Perhaps she'd cried too many times before to let them spill because of anything I could say.
If a kitchen slave is all I'll ever mean to Damien, or just another conquest. Even so, Adrina. I'd be grateful even so.
Her voice lowered.
When I lost my legs, I thought that never again would a man want to hold me and love me. Damien has made me feel like a whole woman again. Tell me that I smile and act cheerful, Adrina, but that's the facade I wear, like a pretty dress. The ugly dress I wear is the fact that I hate the way I am now. There's not a day goes by when I don't think of the way I used to be, graceful and strong, with the agility to do anything. And when I walked down the street, I pulled all admiring eyes my way. Damien has given me back the pride I used to feel. You don't know what it's like to feel half a woman. To be restored and complete again, even if only temporarily, is better than the bleakness I faced before.
She opened her arms wide and pleaded with her eyes.
You are just like my own daughter. To lose your respect hurts so much. Adrina, forgive me for disappointing you and giving you pain. I love you, Adrina, as I've loved you since you were a child and you came running to me through the woods as if you'd found a second mother. Please don't hate me now. Not now when I found such happiness.
Unable to resist, I fell into her arms, forgiving her anything, crying as she cried, and praying that when the time came, Papa would be kinder to her than he had been to Aunt Elsbeth and Mama. He'll marry you, Billy. I cried as I embraced her. I'll see that he does.
No, darling. Not that way, please. I want to be his wife only if he wants that. No force, no blackmail. Just let him decide what's the right thing to do. No man is made happy by a marriage he doesn't want.
A small snort of disgust in the doorway made me look. There stood Vera with the cane she had to use until that lame leg strengthened. How long had Vera stood there eavesdropping?
What wonderful news,
said Vera dryly, her dark eyes hard and cold.
Another freak to add to the White Fern collection.
I've never seen my mother happier,
Arden commented a few weeks later as we ate breakfast together in the refurbished solarium. Hundreds of beautiful plants surrounded us. It was April, and the trees were leafing out. The dogwoods were in bloom, and the azaleas made a riot of color. This was one of the rare occasions when we had the chance to be alone. Vera was on a side porch lounge chair wearing a brief little bikini, pretending to be sunbathing. Arden took great pains not to notice she was there. Sylvia was on the floor with a stuffed cat taken from the playroom upstairs.
Kitty, she said over and over again. Pretty kitty.
And then, dropping the cat, her attention span always short-lived, she picked up one of the crystal prisms and began to hold it in such ways as to throw rainbows everywhere. She had gained considerable skill at directing the rays, and it seemed she wanted to dazzle Vera's eyes. Vera, however, wore sunglasses. Feeling uneasy, I glanced away. Sylvia stepped on all the refracted colors that I avoided. What was that Arden was saying?
Mom said last night that this is the way she always wanted to live, in a wonderful house with people she loves. Adrina, has it occurred to you my mother might be falling in love with your father? We can't expose his fraud. It would ruin him and destroy her. I'll speak to him privately and tell him he has to stop.
Gathering up his papers, Arden neatly bumped them on the table to even the edges, then stashed them in his attaché case before he leaned to kiss me goodbye.
See you around 6. Have a good time with Sylvia down by the river. Be careful, and remember, I love you.
Before he left, he had to steal a glance at Vera, who had taken off the top of her bikini. I glared at him, but he didn't turn to see me. Her breasts were medium-sized and firm. Very pretty breasts I wished she'd keep covered. Come along, Sylvia, I said, getting to my feet. Help me put the dishes in the washer. Papa came into the kitchen as I finished putting everything away.
Adrina, I've been wanting to talk to you about Billy. You've avoided me since that night you caught us. Billy says she talked to you and you understood. Do you understand?
I met his eyes squarely. I understand her, yes. But not you. You'll never marry her. He seemed thunderstruck.
She wants me to marry her? Why, I'll be damned. It's not such a bad idea at that.
He grinned and chucked me under my chin as if I were 2 years old.
If I had a wife again who adored me, I wouldn't need daughters at all, would I?
He grinned again as I stared at him, trying to see if he was serious or only teasing. He said goodbye and hurried out to ride to work with Arden. Come along, Sylvia, I said, catching hold of her hand and guiding her to the side door. We're going to have a lesson on nature today. The flowers are all in bloom, and it's time you knew how to name them, too.
Where are you going?
Vera sang out as we passed her. She'd put her bra back on now that Arden was gone.
Why don't you ask me to go with you? I can walk now, if you don't go too fast.
I refused to answer. The sooner she left, the better. Trotting at my heels, Sylvia tried to keep up. Going to see the fish jump, I called to her. Going to see the ducks, the geese, the squirrels, rabbits, birds, frogs, and flowers. It's spring, Sylvia. Spring. Poets write about spring more than any other season because it's the time for rebirth, for celebrating the end of winter and, hopefully, the departure of Vera. Summer comes next. We're going to teach you how to swim. Sylvia will soon be a young woman and no longer a child, and by the time she is, we want Sylvia to be able to do everything other young women her age do. Reaching the riverbank, I turned to look for my 10-year-old sister. She wasn't behind me. I glanced back at the house and saw Vera had carried a blanket down onto the lawn and was sunning herself out there as she read a book. A small sound from the edge of the woods made me suspect that at last Sylvia was going to play a hide-and-seek game, something I'd been trying to teach her to do for months. Okay, Sylvia, I called. Ready or not, here I come. Nothing but silence in the woods. I stood there looking around. Sylvia was nowhere in sight. I began to run. The paths here were faint and randomly made. Unfamiliar paths that soon had me befuddled and very anxious. Suddenly, a golden rain tree loomed just ahead of me, and beneath it was a low, grassy mound. I froze and just stared. They'd found the first and best Adrina lying dead on the mound under a golden rain tree, killed by those terrible boys. I began to back off. The woods were usually alive with the sounds of birds claiming their territory, with insects making perpetual hums and buzzes. Why was it so quiet? Deadly quiet. Even the leaves on the trees didn't move. An unearthly stillness visited as my eyes stayed glued to that mound that had to be the one. A drum began to pound behind my ears. Death. I could smell death. Whirling around, I screamed Sylvia's name again. Where are you? Don't hide now, Sylvia. Do you hear me? I can't find you. I'm going back to the house, Sylvia. See if you can catch me. Near the house, I found a stem of pink sweetheart roses that had fallen to the ground. They gave me a hint. There was only one place where they grew, near the cottage where Arden and Billy used to live. Had she made it there and back in such a short time? It had been Sylvia's habit since the first day she came to always pull the prettiest flowers and sniff them. Again, I looked around, wondering what to do next. The rose I now had in my hand was warm, the tiny blossoms crushed as if held too tightly in a small hand. I stared up at the sky. It was cloudy and looked like rain. I could see Whitefern, though it was a good distance away, but where the devil was Sylvia? Home, of course. That had to be the answer. All the time I'd skipped along the trail to the river thinking Sylvia was directly behind me, she must have headed for the cottage, thinking that was our destination. She'd pulled the roses, changed her mind, and headed home. She did have an animal's instinct about storms. Yet I didn't want to leave her if she was still in the woods. All these years I'd waited for Sylvia to do something independent of me except steal Billy's red cart, and she had to choose this day to wander off alone. Maybe Sylvia had even gone down to the river to find me, and when she reached there, I'd been in the woods staring at that rain tree. A chill wind whipped up to beat the branches of the tree so that they fanned and struck at my face. The sun became a sly fugitive, racing to escape the wind, ducking behind the dark clouds that came rushing over the treetops like black pirate ships. I looked for Vera on the lawn, hoping she could tell me if she'd seen Sylvia. Vera wasn't there. I again raced for home. Sylvia had to be there. Inside the door, in the nick of time, I heard the first terrible clap of thunder sound directly overhead. Lightning sizzled and struck something down by the river. The rain beating at the windows seemed likely to break them. It was always dim in our house, but for the brief moments when the sun could shine through the stained glass windows. Without the sun, it was almost dark. I thought about finding matches, lighting a kerosene lamp. Then I heard a cry. Shrill, loud, terrifying. Something clattered down the stairs. I cried out and ran forward to catch whatever it was. I collided with a chair that was out of place, and both Billy and I were always careful to put every chair in the same dents it made in the soft rugs. "Sylvia, is that you?" I called in distress. "Have you fallen?" Or had Vera done it again and we'd have to wait for another bone to heal before she left? Near the newel post, I stumbled over something soft. I fell to my knees and began to crawl around in the dark, feeling with my hands for whatever had made me fall. My right hand slid on something wet, warm, and sticky. At first, I thought it was water from one of the fern pots, but the odor, the thickness of it. Blood. It had to be blood. More gingerly, I reached with my left hand. Hair. Long, thick, curling hair. Strong hair that I knew from the feel was dark blue-black. Billy. Oh, Billy. Please, Billy. Far away in the high cupola, the wind chimes tinkled, pure crystalline tones that shivered down my spine. Gathering Billy's shortened body in my arms, I cried and rocked back and forth, comforting her as I would Sylvia.
even as I did, silly thoughts flitted in and out of my brain. How did the wind get in the house? Who had opened one of the high windows in the cupola that nobody but me ever visited? Over and over again, the same ringing notes. Easing Billy's dead weight to the floor, I crawled to where an oil lamp should have been and felt in a table drawer for matches. Soon, the beaded shade allowed a soft, mellow glow to brighten our foyer. I didn't want to turn and see her lying dead. I should call a doctor, an ambulance, do something just in case she was still alive. I couldn't believe she was already dead. Aunt Elspeth? Billy? Aunt Elspeth? Billy? Confused, time repeating itself. With great difficulty, I managed to stand. Leadenly, I approached the still figure of Billy on the floor, her eyes staring up at the embellished ceiling just as my aunt's eyes had stared. I hovered above Billy. Too late for a doctor to save her. Her glazed eyes told me that. I panicked then, felt weak and faint, though I wanted to scream. On and on, in the flickering, struggling gaslight, I stared down at the beautiful doll without legs, lying at the bottom of the stairs. 6 feet away was the little red cart she must have been riding before she misjudged her positioning, or maybe she'd been coming down the steps with the cart in tow to turn on the lamps? Time was trapping me in déjà vu. Aunt Elspeth, Billy, over and over again the two women changed places. My hands rose to feel my face, which felt numb. Tears slipped between my fingers. That was no princess doll on the floor wearing bright blue with no legs, no feet, and no shoes. This was a human being, with black mascara smearing her cheeks with tears only recently shed. Who had made Billy cry when Papa was gone? What had smeared Billy's scarlet lipstick when Papa was gone? Frozen in shock, I was brought back to myself by a familiar sound, the metal roll of small ball-bearing wheels on the hard marble floor. Ready to scream, I spun around to see Sylvia shoveling along on Billy's cart, which had splintered but was still usable. Sylvia, what did you do? Did you push Billy down the stairs? Did you have to have that cart so much you would hurt Billy? Sylvia, what have you done? In the same old way, as if I hadn't spent a good portion of my life trying to teach her how to hold her head high, Sylvia's head lolled on a rubbery neck, rolled from side to side as her eyes went unfocused and her lips gaped. She grunted, quivered, tried to speak, but in the end nothing came out that could be understood. She seemed just as stupid as when she'd come home for the first time. Immediately guilty and feeling ashamed, I hurried to take her into my arms. She shrank away. Her vacant eyes appeared huge in her pale and frightened face. Sylvia, forgive me. I'm sorry. Sorry. Even if you didn't like Billy, you wouldn't hurt her, would you? You didn't push her down the stairs. I know you wouldn't do that.
What's going on here?
Vera called from the top of the stairs. A lilac towel was wrapped about her naked body, another swathed about her wet hair. She held her hands away from her as if she'd just finished a manicure and didn't want to smear the wet polish.
I thought I heard someone scream. Who screamed?
With teary eyes, I stared up at her and then pointed down at the floor. Billy fell, I said weakly.
Fell?
Said Vera, coming slowly down the stairs, holding onto the banister. Reaching the bottom step, she leaned to peer into Billy's face. I wanted to shield Billy from that kind of cruel curiosity.
Oh,
sighed Vera.
She's dead. I know the look. Seen it 100 times. First time I saw it, I could have screamed myself. Now sometimes I think some are better off dead. When I was in the tub, I could swear I heard Sylvia screaming too.
My breath caught. I looked at Sylvia, who was again riding on Billy's little red cart. With a rapt look of intense enjoyment, as if knowing that the cart was hers forever now, she rolled happily along, softly singing the playroom song to herself. I felt almost sick. What else did you hear, Vera?
Billy shouting something at Sylvia. I thought she was telling Sylvia to leave her cart alone, but as you know, Sylvia can't seem to leave it alone. She wanted it. Now she has it.
When I looked again, Sylvia had disappeared. I ran to search the house and find her, as Vera called Papa's office. What had Sylvia done?
Breaking through. Sylvia was nowhere to be found. Hysterical, I ran outside in the rain, searching for her.
You come out! Don't try to hide! Sylvia, why did you do it? Did you shove Aunt Elspeth, too?
Oh, Sylvia, I don't want them to put you away. I don't!
I tripped and fell to the ground and just lay there, crying, not caring anymore. No matter what I did or how hard I tried, everything went wrong. What was wrong with me? With White Fern, with Papa, with all of us. It was useless to try to find happiness. Whenever I had it just within my grasp, it slipped from my hand and shattered. It just wasn't fair what had happened to my mother, to my aunt, and now to Billy. I beat at the ground and screamed at God for being unmerciful. "Stop doing this to me," I yelled. "You killed the first Adrina. Are you trying to kill me too, by killing all those I love?" A small touch on my arm brought me back to myself. Through my tears, I turned to see Sylvia above me, pleading with eyes that had focused again.
"Adrina,"
she said in her slow way. I sat up and with relief pulled her into my arms. On the wet grass, she slumped against me. "It's all right," I crooned. "I know you didn't mean to hurt Billy." Gently, I rocked her back and forth, thinking, despite myself, of her dislike for Billy and how she coveted that red cart. Several times she'd shown the colors the prisms made into my own eyes. An accident? Deliberately? Of course, whatever Sylvia had done, it had to be done without intent to kill. She'd shoved Billy off the cart, and when she had, both Billy and the cart had clattered down the stairs. But not deliberately planned, for Sylvia couldn't think ahead. Sylvia started to speak, but speech didn't come easily to her. As she struggled to say the right words, with the rain soaking us both to the skin, Arden came running to me.
"Adrina, Vera called. What's wrong? What are the two of you doing out here in the rain?"
How could I tell him? Thank God Vera hadn't made the effort. Death seemed as nothing to her, an everyday occurrence that made her only curious, not sad. "Let's go inside, darling," I said, as he helped me to stand. Holding fast to Sylvia's hand, I guided him to the side door and into the hall that led to the dining room. I stood and allowed him to dry my hair with a towel taken from the powder room behind him. I saw my pale reflection in the mirror. "It's your mother, Arden," I said falteringly.
"What about my mother?"
Immediately he was alarmed. He ran a nervous hand through his hair.
"Adrina, what's wrong?"
"Sylvia and I went down to the river, or at least, I thought Sylvia was behind me. I floundered, and then I had to let it gush out. When I went back, the storm had started. The front hall was dark. Something came crashing down the stairs. I stumbled on whatever it was. Then Arden... It was... Billy! She fell down the stairs. The cart came with her. Arden, it's just like what happened to Aunt Elspeth."
But...
he said, dropping the towel and searching my eyes.
"Your aunt died. Adrina. Mom, she's not dead."
My arms went around him as I pressed my cheek against his. "I'm so sorry, Arden. So sorry to tell you. She's gone, Arden. She fell all the way to the bottom. I think she broke her neck just as my aunt did." His face crumpled. His eyes went void with pain he didn't want me to see. Then he pressed his face into my hair and cried. Just then, a loud roar jolted us both. Papa's voice screamed at Vera.
"What are you saying? Billy can't be dead."
His heavy steps came running down the hall.
"Billy can't have fallen down the stairs. Things like that don't happen twice."
"They do when Sylvia is on the loose," yelled Vera, limping to where we were. "She wanted Billy's red cart and shoved her so she fell down the stairs. I was in the bathtub. I heard the screams." "Then how do you know it was Sylvia?" I yelled. "Can you see through walls, Vera?" In the foyer, Papa knelt beside Billy's still form and tenderly took her into his arms. Her dark head lolled backward, much in the way Sylvia's did.
I was having artificial legs made,
he said in a flat way.
She told me she couldn't ever use them to walk, but I thought she could have pretty legs just for showing off when I took her into town. They would have fit over the stumps and looked good. Then she wouldn't have to wear all those long, hot dresses to... Oh, oh, oh,
he sobbed. Carefully, he put Billy back on the floor, and then he jumped to his feet and made a grab to seize Sylvia.
Damn you!
He screamed as he came at me to get to her. I shoved Sylvia behind me and heard her whimper of fright. Wait a minute, Papa. Sylvia was with me all the time. We went down to the river, and when we came back, Billy was dead on the floor.
But Vera just said...
He shouted, then stopped, looking from me to Vera. You know what Vera is, Papa. She lies.
I did not lie,
yelled Vera, her pale face very white, her apricot hair flaming like wildfire.
I heard Billy yelling at Sylvia, and then I heard Billy scream. Adrina is the liar.
Papa's eyes narrowed as he tried to guess who was telling the truth.
All right, both of you tell different tales.
He sniffled and wiped away his tears, shrugged and turned so he couldn't see Billy.
I know for a fact that Vera is a liar, and I also know that Adrina would do anything to protect Sylvia, regardless of how Billy died. I cannot bear to look at Sylvia now. I am going to have her put away so she can never harm anyone else.
No! I screamed, pulling Sylvia into my arms and holding her protectively. If you put Sylvia away, then send me with her. Whatever happened, it was an accident. His hard eyes became slits.
Then Sylvia was not with you all the time?
Something came to me then and lifted a burden from my heart. Papa, Sylvia would never go near Billy. She refused to let Billy touch her, and never would she willingly touch Billy, even to get her cart. Her way was to sneak Billy's cart from her when Billy wasn't looking.
I don't believe you,
said Papa, looking at Sylvia with loathing.
I only hope for your sake that the police will. Two deaths from falls down the same stairs is going to be rather difficult to explain.
It was Papa who called the police, and by the time they arrived, we'd all gained some control of our emotions. With Billy photographed a dozen times first, the police ambulance drove her away. Pacing before the ornate fireplace covered by tooled leather, Papa made a formidable, impressive opponent for the detective who came with the same two policemen who'd investigated my aunt's death. He told his story straight. Then it was Vera's turn. I marveled at how protective she was of Sylvia, never mentioning the shouts or the screams she'd heard.
I was taking a bath, shampooing, doing my nails, and when I came out, I heard my cousin down in the foyer crying. When I went down, I saw Mrs. Lowe at the bottom of the steps.
Wait a minute, miss. You are not Mrs. Lowe's sister?
We were raised as sisters in this house, but we are really first cousins.
Papa scowled darkly, but at the same time seemed to breathe a sigh of relief. It was then my turn to repeat what I knew. I weighed each word I said carefully, doing my utmost to shield Sylvia, who crouched in a distant corner with her head hanging so low her long hair completely concealed her face. She seemed like a small puppy cowering in the corner after misbehaving. My mother-in-law had a way of lowering herself down the stairs one step at a time. As she went, she'd take the cart with her, putting it on the next lower step first. She went up the stairs in the same way. Her arms were very strong. She had a splinter in one finger. She must have put too much weight on that hand and lost her balance and fell. I can't be positive, for I wasn't there. I had taken my sister Sylvia down to the river with me.
The two of you stayed together all the time?
Yes, sir, all the time.
And when the two of you came back, you found your mother-in-law dead on the floor?
No, sir. Soon after we came in the door, before I had the chance to light the lamps, I heard her falling down, and the cart, too. Vera was watching the younger policeman, about 30, who kept staring at her. Oh, my God. She was flirting with him, crossing and uncrossing her legs, fiddling with the neckline of her half-open robe. The older policeman didn't seem nearly as interested, but rather disgusted.
Then that means, Miss Whitefern,
he said quietly,
that you were the only one in the house when Mrs. Lowe Sr. fell.
I was taking a bath, repeated Vera, throwing me a hard glare. I sunbathed this morning, and that made me feel hot and sticky.
I came inside to wash my hair, and, as I always do, I soaked and did my nails. Did my toenails, too, she said. She thrust forth her expertly manicured nails. Her gleaming toenails peeked through her sandals.
If I had struggled with Mrs. Lowe, I would have smeared my nail polish.
How long does it take for nail polish to dry?
He asked me this, not Vera. It all depends. I tried to remember. One coat dries in a hurry, but the more coats you use, the longer it takes to dry. I try to be careful with my nails for at least 30 minutes after the last coat.
Exactly, said Vera, looking at me gratefully. And if you know anything at all about nails, you can see I put on 5 coats, counting the base coat and the top sealing coat.
The policeman seemed lost in the complexity of feminine toiletry. In the end, it was decided our front stairs were highly dangerous to everyone, especially after they were examined and a loose place in the carpeting was found.
Easily that could have tripped her up,
said the younger officer. I stared down at the red carpeting, trying to remember how that could have happened when our house had been refurbished from top to bottom and new carpet had been laid on the stairs. How could a woman with no legs trip anyway? Unless somehow she'd started to move her hand and it had snagged beneath the loose place? Or her clothes had caught on something? Or a prism was flashed in her eyes to blind her? But the hall had been dark after the sun went away. Maybe we all looked too grief-stricken to be murderers. Or Papa had strings he pulled, for again, another death at Whitefern was called accidental. I was uneasy in Sylvia's presence now. She hadn't liked Aunt Elsbeth either. I began to watch her covertly, again realizing, but with more impact, that Sylvia resented anyone who might be a threat to her place in my heart. It was in her eyes, in her every reaction, that I was the only one who mattered in her life, and to me she was going to cling. I had done that to her myself, with a little urging from Papa. The day of Billy's funeral, I was deathly sick with the worst cold of my life. Feverish and depressed, I lay on my bed as Vera tended to me, seeming happy to show off her professional skills. Tossing and turning, burning with fever, I hardly heard her when she spoke of how handsome Arden had become.
Of course, he was always good-looking, but when he was a boy, I thought him weak.
He seems to have taken on a little of Papa's strength and personality. Have you noticed?
What she said was true. Arden was as ambivalent about my father as I was. He loathed him and admired him, and bit by bit, he was picking up Papa's mannerisms, his walk, his firm, resolute way of talking. Dreamlike, I saw Billy behind my eyes sitting at the cottage window, passing goodies out to Arden and me when we were children. I saw her as she'd looked the last week of her life, radiant with happiness because she was in love. But why had Billy tried to use the front stairs when the back ones were so much closer to the kitchen? Just like Aunt Elsbeth, who had also spent most of her days in the kitchen. Could it be that because the front stairs led straight down to the marble floor without the sharp turns and carpeted landings of the back stairs, they were the only deadly stairs? Then that meant someone had deliberately pushed both my aunt and Billy. I lived that day of Billy's death over and over again, hearing her scream, then the clatter and thuds of both Billy and the cart crashing down the stairs.
"Stop crying,"
ordered Vera harshly as she thrust a thermometer in my mouth.
"Remember when my mother told you that tears never did any good? They don't. Never have, never will. You take from life what you want and don't ask permission, or else you get nothing."
As sick as I was, I cringed from the harshness of her loud voice when there was no man around to hear her speak. She threw Sylvia, who was crouched in the corner, a malicious glance.
"I despise that little monster. Why didn't you tell the truth to the police and rid yourself of her? She's the one who killed my mother, just as she killed Billy."
She strode over to stand in front of Sylvia, making me shove up on my elbows to try to prevent what might happen next.
"Get this, Sylvia,"
shouted Vera, prodding Sylvia with her foot.
"You are not going to sneak up behind me and shove me down the stairs, for I'll be on my guard. And it's not going to happen, understand?"
"Leave her alone, Vera." My voice was weak, my vision fuzzy, but it seemed Sylvia was more terrified of Vera than Vera was of her. So terrified of Vera that she crawled under my bed and hid there until Papa and Arden came home. Life went sour after Billy died, perhaps because all of us, but Vera and Sylvia, missed her so much, perhaps because I was suffering a double loss now that I doubted and mistrusted Sylvia. I gave up on Sylvia and no longer bothered to try to teach her anything. Often, when I turned suddenly, I caught Sylvia staring at me wistfully, a yearning in her expression. It was not so much in her eyes as it was in her attitude as she tried to catch hold of my hand and tried to please me with wildflowers she brought in from the woods. My cold lingered and lingered, keeping me coughing through most of the summer. I was 19 still and looking forward to that birthday that would make me 20. I'd feel safer then, with no 9 to curse me. Life seemed too cruel, taking both my aunt and Billy in only 1 year. And Vera was still with us, taking over the household chores with a willingness that both surprised and pleased Papa. I lost weight and began to neglect my appearance. My 20th birthday came and went, and the relief of escaping a year with a 9 in it didn't bring me happiness. I clung more to the shadows near the wall and eyed all colors with fear. I wished now my memory still had holes into which I could drop my anguish and my suspicions of Sylvia. But the Swiss cheese memory belonged to my childhood, and now I knew only too well how to hold on to that which grieved me. Another autumn passed, another winter. There were nights when Arden didn't come home at all, and I didn't care.
"Here,"
said Vera one spring day near the anniversary of Billy's death.
"Drink this hot tea and put some color in your cheeks. You look like death warmed over."
"I like iced tea better," I said, shoving the cup and saucer away. Angrily, she shoved it back at me.
"Drink the tea, Adrina. Stop behaving like a child. Didn't you just say a few minutes ago you had a chill?"
Obediently, I picked up the cup and started to put it to my lips when Sylvia came running forward. She hurled her full weight against Vera, who fell forward and grabbed for me. In doing so, she knocked the cup from my hand. It fell to the floor and broke, and both Vera and I tipped over in the chair. Screaming her rage, with pain twisting her face, Vera tried to punish Sylvia, but she'd sprained her ankle.
"Oh, goddamn that moron! I'm going to talk to Papa about having her put away."
Blinking my eyes and trying to pull myself back into focus, I picked myself up and, out of habit, pulled Sylvia into my arms. "No, Vera. Not as long as I live will Sylvia be put away. Why don't you leave? I'll take over the housework and the cooking. We don't need you any longer." She began to cry.
"After all I've done to help you, and now you don't want me?"
She sobbed as if her heart were broken.
"You're spoiled, Adrina. Spoiled. If you had a backbone at all, you'd have left this place a long time ago."
"I thank you for taking care of me, Vera, but from this day forward, I'll do for myself." One day in summer, Arden came storming home from his office very early. He ran into our bedroom and yanked me from the bed.
"Enough is enough,"
he yelled.
"I should have done this months ago. You cannot throw away your life and mine because you're not mature enough to face facts. Death is all around us. From the moment we're born, we're on our way to our graves. But think of it this way, Adrina,"
he said as his voice softened and he pulled me into his embrace.
"No one really ever dies. We are like the leaves of the trees. We bud out in the spring of our birth and fall off in the autumn of our lives. But we do come back. Just like the leaves of spring, we do live again."
For the first time since that awful day Billy fell, I really saw my husband's fatigue, the small lines etched around his tired, red-rimmed eyes, eyes that had sunk deeper into his skull like mine. He hadn't shaved, and that lent him a raffish, out-of-character look, like a stranger I didn't know and didn't love. I saw faults in his face I'd never noticed before. Pulling away, I fell back on the bed and just lay there. He came to kneel and bow his head on my breast, pleading for me to come back to him.
"I love you, and day by day you are killing me. I lost my mother and my wife on the same day, and I still eat, still go to work, still carry on. But I can't continue to live this kind of life, if this can be called living."
Something in me cracked then. My arms slid around him and my fingers curled into his thick hair. I love you, Arden. Don't lose patience. Keep holding on, and I'll come your way. I know I will, for I want to. Almost crying, kissing me with a passion almost crazy, he finally drew away and smiled.
All right. I'm willing to wait, but not forever. Remember that.
Soon he was in the bathroom showering, and Sylvia had risen from her place in the corner to stand at the foot of my bed. Pitifully, she tried to focus her eyes. Her small hands reached for me pleadingly, begging me to come back to her, too. She had changed. I hardly knew her. At 12 years of age, Sylvia had developed almost overnight, or while I wasn't looking, a woman's figure. Someone had brushed her hair and tied it back in a ponytail with an aqua satin ribbon that matched the lovely outfit I'd never seen before. Totally surprised, I stared at her beautiful young face, her shapely young body that the form-fitting cotton dress revealed. What a fool I was to have suspected Sylvia could harm anyone. She needed me. How could I have forgotten Sylvia in my apathy? I stared at Sylvia, who had moved to the dimmest corner and crouched with her knees pulled up so the crotch of her panties showed. "Pull your dress down," I thought, and watched her obey without any sense of power or surprise. A long time ago, Sylvia and I had developed a rapport between us. Mothers and aunts could die, daughters and sons, too. Yet life went on, and the sun still shone, the rain still fell, and the months came and went. Papa began to show more definite signs of aging, as he also showed faint signs of mellowing. I knew that Arden was seeing a great deal of Vera away from Whitefern. Even under my own roof, I often glimpsed them in some room that was seldom used. I closed my mind and my eyes and pretended I didn't notice Arden's flushed face and the way Vera had to smooth down her tight sheath dress that seemed painted on. She smiled at me smugly, mockingly, telling me she'd won. Why didn't I care anymore? Late one evening, when I no longer expected to see Arden enter my room, he opened the door and came in to sit on the edge of my bed. To my utter amazement, he began to tug off his shoes, then his socks. I started to say something sarcastic about Vera, who'd been bitchy all day, but I said nothing.
"In case you're interested,"
he said in a stiff way,
"I'm not going to touch you. I'd just like to sleep in this room again and feel you near me before I make up my mind what to do with my life. I'm not happy, Audrina. I don't think you're happy either. I want you to know I've talked to Damien, and your father no longer embezzles money from his dormant accounts. He's honest now about old stock certificates that have great value. He was surprised I'd caught on and didn't deny anything. All he said was, 'I did it for a good cause.'"
He gave his information in an indifferent way, as if the words were spoken only to bridge the gap between us. Now that Arden was assistant vice president of my father's firm, he'd stopped talking of someday returning to his first love, architecture. He put away his draftsman tools, the drawing table Billy had bought for him when he was 16, just as he put away the other dreams of his youth. I guess we all did the same thing. Fate dictated the paths we trod. Yet it hurt to see those things carried up into the attic, for so seldom did anything come back down. I watched him put his creative ability away like something useless, and I felt disappointed to see he'd developed Papa's craving for money, for power, and then more money. Though I tried time and time again to find concrete evidence that he was Vera's lover, I guess I didn't really want to know, or easily enough I could have caught them. And time, once so fast, then so slow, speeded up again from the very monotony of everydayness, and I was 22. Another spring and summer would soon disappear into the void I'd created for myself. Just for something to occupy myself with, I seriously began cultivating the rose garden Mama had started long ago. I bought books on how to grow roses and attended garden club meetings, taking Sylvia with me and introducing her for the first time to outsiders. Though she said little, no one thought her anything but shy, or at least they pretended to think that. I dressed Sylvia in pretty clothes and styled her hair becomingly. She was always frightened and seemed relieved to come home again and put on her old garments. One hot Saturday in late May, I was down on my knees in Mama's rose garden, lightly scratching the ground with a hand rake before I added fertilizer. Tuberose bulbs were nearby, and soon I'd have them in the ground. Sylvia was inside the house taking a nap, and Vera had driven with Papa into town to shop for new clothes. Suddenly, a long shadow threw cool shade above me. I tipped back the brim of my straw hat and stared up at Arden, whom I'd believed was off playing golf with his buddies. A small part of me thought he and Vera could very well have arranged to meet in town.
"Why are you wasting your time out here and forgetting your music?"
he asked harshly, kicking at the bag of fertilizer by my garden tools.
"Anybody can grow flowers, Adrina. Not everybody has the potential to be a great musician."
"What happened to your dream of making all American cities beautiful?" I asked sarcastically, thinking that as soon as I won prizes with my new breeds of roses and tulips, I'd go on to cultivate orchids in a greenhouse I'd ordered. And once I was bored with orchids, I'd find another hobby to keep me going until one day I, too, ended up in the White Fern Cemetery.
"You sound bitter, like your aunt,"
said Arden, as he settled down beside me on the grass.
"Don't we all have dreams when we're very young?"
His voice and face took on a certain wistfulness.
"I used to believe that you would never find anything as fascinating or absorbing as me. How wrong I was. No sooner did we marry than you were locking doors to keep me out. You don't need me like I thought you would. There you are, on your knees, with canvas gloves on your hands, and you keep that damned hat on your head to shade your face so I can't even see you. You don't lift your eyes to meet mine, and you've stopped smiling when I come home. You treat me as if I'd become a stuffy piece of furniture to clutter up the neatness of your days without me. Don't you love me anymore, Adrina?"
I went on feeding the roses, plotting the tulip beds, thinking about the orchids, wondering how soon Sylvia would wake up. Arden reached to put his arms about me.
"I love you,"
he said in such a solemn way I was alerted enough to stop what I was doing. His arms about me knocked off my wide-brimmed hat.
"If you can't love me, Adrina, then let me go. Set me free to find someone who will love me as I want and need to be loved."
I forced myself to say indifferently, "Vera?"
"Yes,"
he bit out.
"Vera. At least she isn't cold and unresponsive. She treats me like a man. I'm not a saint or a devil, Adrina. Just a man who has desires you won't satisfy. I've tried for almost 3 years. Oh, how I've tried. But you won't yield. And now I'm tired of trying. I want out. I'm going to divorce you and marry Vera. Unless you can love me physically as much as you love me in other ways."
I swiveled around on my knees to stare into his face. He really did love me. It was in his eyes. I saw love for me shining in his eyes, and a terrible sadness was there. Divorcing me and marrying Vera wouldn't make him truly happy, not nearly as happy as my physical response would. Confused thoughts raced through my mind. Puppy love, my aunt and father had called what I felt for Arden, and they'd been right. Adolescent love that wanted nothing more than hugs, small kisses, and hand-holding. Now he was leaving me for Vera, and in the end, he'd be just another Lamar Rensdale. Vera didn't love him. She'd never love any man more than she loved herself, or maybe because she couldn't love herself, she couldn't love anyone. I shook my head, wondering if at last I was finally growing up. Was the mature side of me going to burgeon forth at this very moment? I felt a rising excitement, and none of the fear I'd experienced on our wedding night. He could have gone and never said a word to warn me. He could have taken Vera, and I wouldn't have contested our divorce, and he knew that. Still, he was giving me another chance. He did love me. It wasn't pity. He did love me. His eyes delved into mine as his hands gripped my shoulders, and his voice filled with urgency as if he sensed what was going on within me.
"We can start all over,"
he said in an excited way.
"This time we can start off right. Just you and me, without Sylvia in the next room for you to fret about. I have physical feelings for Vera, but I love you in all the sweet, romantic ways that seem silly with someone as unromantic as Vera. You touch my heart when I come home and I see you sitting near a window staring out. I stand and I see the way the light falls through your hair and makes it a halo, and your skin seems translucent.
and I'm filled with wonder that you are my wife. Vera never makes me feel I have anyone special, only someone any man could have.